Welcome to the World of Woodhouse, a series of podcasts from the P.G. Woodhouse Society, UK, to commemorate the work of P.G. Woodhouse on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of his death. I'm Alexander Armstrong, and I have the huge privilege of being president of the P.G. Woodhouse Society, UK, a literary society of enthusiasts that celebrates Woodhouse and his work. And it is my delightful duty to introduce the latest guest in this series of podcasts.
Hello, I'm Lynn Truss, and I'm one of the patrons of the UK's P.G. Woodhouse Society. What drew me to Woodhouse, as it draws everybody, really, was simply the quality of his prose, his sheer writerly ability, which James Agate quite rightly said was a little below Shakespeare's and any distance you like above everyone else's. It's because his style is economical but glorious and is all about brilliant word choice, which you might think all writers choose their words, but you'd be wrong. I'm going to read a passage from one of the golf stories, which I particularly love. I love the golf stories, partly because the sport supplies even more gorgeous vocabulary with all the spoons and mashies and bogeys and casual water and the pro Sunday McHoots, which always makes me laugh. I particularly always love the passage in The Salvation of George Mackintosh concerning Celia, who is driven mad by her fiancé's sudden addiction to the sound of his own voice. And she speaks to the narrator and tells her and says, "I killed him with my niblick," said Celia. "I nodded. If the thing was to be done at all, it was unquestionably a niblick shot." The stories in the two collections, The Heart of a Goof and The Clicking of Cuthbert, they always, of course, turn on how love ruins a chap's game or the reverse, it saves the chap's game. But the joy is, of course, all in the description of the players on the course hacking into the long rough as if killing snakes or teasing the ball like a cat investigating a tortoise. He missed short putts because of the uproar of the butterflies in the adjoining meadows. Also, the lovely wife parallels to between golf and life, such as love is a fever which, so to speak, drives off without wasting time on the address, or golf, like measles, should be caught young, for if postponed to riper years, the results may be serious. So I'd like to read from the story The Awakening of Rollo Podmarsh, which appears in the collection The Clicking of Cuthbert. I have a reason for choosing it, which I will explain. But meanwhile, what you need to know is that the speaker is addressing a man whose favourite sport is not golf, but bowls. She drove off one of those fair to medium balls which go with a 12 handicap. Not a great length, but nice and straight. "Splendid," cried Rollo, devoutly. "Oh, I don't know," said Mary. "I wouldn't call it anything special." Titanic emotions were surging in Rollo's bosom as he addressed the ball. He had never felt like this before, especially on the first tee. As a rule, he found himself overcome with a nervous humility. "Oh, Mary, Mary," he breathed to himself as he swung. "You who squander your golden youth fooling about on a bowling green will not understand the magic of those three words. But if you were a golfer, you would realise that in selecting just that invocation to breathe to himself, Rollo Podmarsh had hit, by sheer accident, on the ideal method of achieving a fine drive. Let me explain. The first two words, tensely breathed, are just sufficient to take a man with the proper slowness to the top of his swing. The first syllable of the second Mary exactly coincides with the striking of the ball, and the final re takes care of the follow-through. The consequence was that Rollo's ball, instead of hopping down the hill like an embarrassed duck, as was its usual practice, sang off the tee with a scream like a shell, nodded in passing to Mary's ball where it lay some 150 yards down the course, and carrying on from there came to rest within easy distance of the green. For the first time in his golfing life, Rollo Podmarsh had hit a nifty. Now, I chose this because many years ago, I was reading Woodhouse's golf stories while staying with the mother of a friend on the Isle of Wight, and I was regaling her with bits, which I think was okay because she was very fond of golf and, in fact, played twice a week at the local course at Freshwater Bay. So one warm summer's day while I was staying, I offered to caddy for her and, by the way, nearly collapsed from heat stroke. While she at 75 just toddled around perfectly with no effect at all. But the point was that I don't know, it must have been, you know, one of the holes that she played a million times before. She played it really badly. She topped the ball. And I said, oh, what happened there? And she said, I tried saying, oh, Mary, Mary, to see if it worked. When Penguin reissued the entire Woodhouse collection in the 1990s, I spent a day, and it was a very memorable day, at the Addington Golf Course near Croydon, South London. It was one of the courses that Woodhouse played a lot. And I was accompanied by Charles Woodhouse, Plum's cousin once removed. This was for a feature in the Times, and the aim, for me anyway, was to see the bunker on the 6th, because the introduction to the clicking of Cuthbert is actually signed from there. It says, P.G. Woodhouse, the 6th bunker at Addington. And this suggested it was a pretty hard bunker to get out of, and so it proved, because being a very bad golfer myself, in fact, complete novice, I couldn't begin to get out of it. I just kept hitting it, and kept falling back down again. And I think it started to annoy my companions, who could get out of the bunker quite easily, but I just really couldn't. I scratched like a hen, I pretended to kill snakes, and I even tried sickening violence, because that's a wonderful way that Woodhouse uses for he struck the ball with a sickening violence. But anyway, it was all hopeless. But I did feel the presence of Woodhouse, I think, in that awful Miltonic bunker, and it was a privilege. We are so lucky to have had Woodhouse. I can't imagine a world without him. I want to wish long life to the society that will be celebrating him in 2025, which is the 50th anniversary of his death. He simply was the greatest, funniest writer that ever lived.